Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from the Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
Podcast starts now. Wow.
TG, say it with me. IF.
Thank you for saying that, because I have actually not considered the fact that it is Friday, and this is something, obviously time affects us whether we like it or not, and I have not been letting time affect me.
Because you're in the midst of your week off work. The rest of the month, you were Mad Men, putting on the suit, cheating on your wife, 15 martinis at lunch.
Quite literally.
Always knew exactly what time it was. Your secretary was getting sexually harassed. This week, you are in Bushwick. You are going to the underground show. You are having an orgy in the dark room at basement. You are seeing Charlie XCX at Boiler Room. This is not normally what our podcast is like, of me just saying gay guy references.
No, but you're really good at it.
Thank you. I mean, I know all of them.
Someone's been on Twitter this week.
Oh, yeah. Some would say it's one of the few things I've done.
I've actually had the most un-TGIF day of my life.
Well, first of all, it's 1:15 p.m., not to break the fourth wall.
Okay.
So what can you have done at this point?
You have no idea what I have been up to.
Okay.
I have packed up all of my clothes in my apartment.
Today?
Into boxes. Ah. This very morning.
Because, of course, you and your partner are moving temporarily, at least, to the city of Los Angeles.
Yeah, hard temporary.
Uh-huh.
And everyone, whenever you say that, everyone rolls their eyes at you. They say, oh, just say you're moving. I'm not. It's temporary.
How are you handling the fact that you are attempting to sublet your apartment furnished? Does furnished also include everything you own except for clothes?
Yeah, I'm thinking getting my clothes out. That's number one.
Yeah. Are you going to hire, sorry to interrupt right off the bat, are you going to hire someone to do a deep clean?
I think we will.
Okay. Consider it.
Is this part, this is like an ad for my sublet.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Well, you do, not to call you out, you do need some people.
Okay, but by the time this comes out, I might not.
That's true.
Hopefully not.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly clothes, and if there's anything like super personal, I'll take
it
out. Dildo. I'll leave the lubes I don't use.
All the lubes. leave lubes around the house, like how people have coasters so you don't stain the table.
Well, also you have to give people some, like, Easter eggs. Like, you need to be like, because here's what, they're going to want to snoop.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to give them something to find so they can have joy.
Yeah.
Imagine if you're in a sublet, an Airbnb, and you open the bedside table and there's not a little sex thing in it.
Yeah.
You'll be like, well, I deserve a discount then.
But what if they then, like, you know, post about it and it goes viral and then it's like gay comedian.
George, this, you don't understand. That's best case scenario.
That's best case scenario. Yeah.
I don't know. Have I told you this? My new mindset, which is, I don't know how much of a joke it is.
Okay.
But like, somebody was talking about the planes that are like, the doors are flying off or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, I would never take that plane. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's the only plane I'm going to take.
Sam,
because that's the book.
But you would die.
I was on the plane where the door fell off and I lived.
Well, here's the thing. There's an invincibility complex, first of all, where I'm like, well, I won't be the one that dies, right, but I will be the one that gets a book.
Well, so this is the thing with things happening to you and with trauma of any kind.
Drama.
It is actually like so difficult to find the right trauma that is just unique enough that you can be the voice of it, but not so unique that it's unrelatable for anyone else. I think, of course, growing up in a cult is a dream.
That's the fantasy.
Because
you pretty much have a house instantly.
Yes. And it can't be too dark.
No.
And I'm not going to say specific crimes that can be committed in cults and have been, but there can't be anything that really turns people off.
No, just isolation.
Yes.
That's the key.
Isolation,
some cultural norms that are bizarre.
Yeah, hadn't been inside a Burger King until I was 35.
Yes, that's a book. I feel like the trauma thing is interesting because I was like, as I went to the hospital once, famously.
Well,
and so I was like, okay, this is juicy. I'm at the hospital.
Yes.
Like, this sucks, but I will be getting attention from this, and I will be posting, and it's gonna be huge.
Right.
Then I go to the hospital a second time, a month and a half later, and I say, I don't know how much I'm going to want to post about this one.
Oh.
Because then you're sort of hospital guy, and you're sort of put in a box, and people are genuinely concerned. And that's when things start getting unfun.
Well, the thing with health issues and commodifying them to sell a book is that they have to first resolve themselves, and then you can tell the story. Because otherwise, if people are actively worried about you, you either have to die.
Yeah.
Publish posthumously, or potentially have a partner or family members write a book called My Brother Sam.
Yeah, that would be a bummer.
Right.
Because then
you would not be a part of it.
Yeah.
So either that, or you live, and then it's the triumphant story of the triumphant human fruit.
You can say it. The Boy Who Lived.
The Boy Who Lived.
Yeah.
By Sam Taggart.
Sam Taggart. There also is like, hospital twice. That's when people really, I was referring to it recently as hospital tokens, where it's like you can use one hospital token a year and be like, post about being in the hospital once. And then once you're out of hospital tokens, you can't post anymore.
I think, okay, I see what you're saying, but I don't think the issue is the number of times. I think the issue is how specific you are about why you're there. You both times were a little bit like, shh, I'm in the hospital. Like, to this
day, is that
day,
so wrong?
Do most people, I have to say, I'm probably one of the people in your life you talk to the most, I hope. I think I barely understand exactly where we're at in terms of your health issues.
Yeah, you and my mom both.
Right.
Everyone's like, what's going on? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not the doctor.
Right.
No, I do
to
know.
To be clear, the doctor is my future father-in-law. So I should, in fact, know even more than I do. But he's obsessed with doctor-patient confidentiality.
I actually find that so problematic. It's like, spill the tea,
girl. Spill the tea. Every time I see him, I'm like, are you going to spill the tea?
Well, I told him so that he would spread the word. Like, I waive my confidentiality.
Sure. Okay, so any updates?
I'm actually getting surgery in a week and a half.
What?
Yeah.
You never tell me anything.
Why would I tell you? It's upcoming. I'll tell you when it's done.
Well,
that's sort of my theory.
Okay. There's so much. We might have to bring in our guest because we need someone to sort of navigate this couple's rift.
There was so much juice in that you have to unpack.
Yeah.
At some point.
Right. So
you don't have to do it right now.
No,
I do have questions. Mm. Maybe off camera, maybe after the pod, but once the father-in-law came in, then
there's a lot of story here.
And let me just say, please welcome Jabuki Young White.
Hello, everybody. Hi.
So my boyfriend's father is a doctor. Not to brag.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm taking it as a brag. I'm very jealous.
Doctor, that's right, in New York City, in the borough of Manhattan.
It's pretty much the nicest kind of doctor you can get.
Was this by accident that this happened, or was this
No. Sam,
this is intentional.
Sam at one point, not to call you out, was like,
please.
I'm in Bleep Hospital. Then I told everyone, Sam is at Bleep Hospital, and every single person I knew was like, get him out of there. People die there every day. And so then I was like, who do I know?
Our local spot. Our local spot.
And I was like, who?
Oh.
Spam risk.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
I was like,
it's Woodhull Hospital.
Yeah. They're like, stop talking about us. Anyway, it's not an
so then
story.
And then I was like,
can Matthew's dad, he's retired too, and but actually loves being a doctor, and I think misses having patients. So yeah. He really makes it
like
his passion project.
One less job.
Very much.
Truly. I love that.
Yeah. He actually, like, I kept dropping the, like, line of convo. I was like, well, he helped me through that. And then he kept following up. And I was like, this is actually so nice.
Yeah. We're not used to... the only way you can get good medical care in this country is if your podcast co-host's boyfriend's dad is a retired doctor.
I mean, honestly, I, like, could not have gotten as good of care without him. So there you go.
Jibuki, what do you think is the appropriate number of times you can post from a hospital in one calendar year?
Man. Well,
as a gay creator.
As a gay content creator.
Whose brand is fun? Mm.
It really depends. I feel like there's definitely one probably for you being the patient. Mm-hmm. But then after that, go crazy.
Oh, visiting?
You could just be in a hospital.
That's true.
Visiting. Like, yeah. You could just be like, I had... an experience that really opened my eyes, and now I kind of love hospitals. And
shout out to nurses, heart.
Yeah, shout out to nurses, and I have fun in hospitals. You could, like, go do TikToks with them.
Start a comedy show.
Yeah, start a comedy
show.
In
the non-denominational chapel.
That's a great idea. I actually did go back to pick up records one day, and I was like, God, I loved it here.
When you said that, I was like, I thought of vinyl record. I was like,
Oh my God, if you ever been to the record store inside of the hospital...
That would actually be
great prices.
A great business idea. Yeah.
Well, no, I've always been pushing just one room that has a vibe in a hospital. Just one.
Thank you.
Yeah. Why is that illegal?
Is it so wrong to want to catch a vibe in a hospital?
if a bill is $100,000, you can't make one room with lights?
Right? Yeah. A little, like, those tiny Fiji water bottles. Like,
yes.
Please. I don't know. I do think...
A sneaker store / barber shop?
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about milking trauma for a book?
Milking trauma for a book? I'm kind of neutral on it. I will say, I think that you should be able to just make up stuff.
Yeah.
As long as anyone should be able to make up stuff.
Yeah. You should just be able to make up stuff. And just be like, yeah, it's autofiction, or like, you know, I feel like, why not?
Well, let me tell you something. David Sedaris has been doing that for decades.
Yeah.
So this is new. Somebody, Jesse David Fox, mentioned this when we had him on. And you guys, like, said it like it was fact. And I was sort of like, okay, if two people are saying this is like it's fact, I guess I just have to believe it.
I mean, to be clear, we have said this. David Sedaris is mother, you know, without him, there can never be a gay comedian.
There can never be a gay
sort of middle brow gay comedians that are sort of like, my mom. But I do think it is sort of a open secret that, like, that many things can't happen in that way to one person.
Right. Or,
and he sort of, like, flattens the characters that he is describing. Like, each of his sisters and his parents, everyone sort of becomes a cartoon character, which, to be clear, I have no ethical qualms with. I'm just saying that is a fact.
Do you guys remember when that guy...
it's the creative part of creative nonfiction.
Of course.
Yeah. What are you going to do otherwise?
I mean, you got to add a little.
Yeah.
Do you remember when that guy got, like, canceled after being on Oprah's book club?
Yep.
James Frey.
He said that
Frey.
He was, like, at 9/11 or something. Right?
Oh.
Wasn't it?
No, that was like, I'm in the lead.
Oh, that was okay.
No, this is the guy that wrote that book called,
A Child
like,
Called It.
A Million Beautiful Things.
A Million Little Pieces.
A Million Little Pieces.
I don't know that one.
It was about his drug addiction.
Yeah.
But then it turns out he, like, wasn't addicted to drugs.
Yeah. But like, he kind of was too, just not to the extent that he said he was.
But I feel like that's the thing is, like, you're going to lie. Or you're going to, like,
I agree.
Massage. So it's like, just go full fiction. Just like, be like, I don't know what's true. I don't know what's not true. Make it fun for me. Because I don't believe you that you're telling the truth when they're like, all of this happened. I'm like, no, it didn't.
I think when it's about your own life, you can lie. If you're a reporter reporting on Russia, potentially you should tell the truth.
No, I say paint me a picture.
All right.
Make me care.
Magical realism.
Yes, yeah,
we need more magical realism in sort of foreign policy reporting.
Of course, if there was a beloved character, potentially more people would care.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? This is actually an issue with the news, is that people who are quote-unquote enemies are actually more cinematic and interesting than people who are supposed to be rooting for.
Yeah.
Like Putin, I'm like, I get who he is.
Well, yeah.
We're talking about a character. I could see exactly who should play him in a movie, how he would look, like his sort of tics, whatever. I'm like, I mean, who is someone who's a hero in public life? anyone who's good. I'm like, I don't know.
Oprah?
To an extent.
I'm trying to think, like, who is good?
Yeah.
Who is good?
But are we talking about, like, good on the spectrum of Putin? Like, who is...
Sure. Who is better than Putin?
Who is Angel Putin?
I guess...
Who's good Putin?
Navalny. May he rest in power.
Like, right, AOC? Right.
Does AOC.
That count?
I think she... Yeah. Maybe it's just that when someone's good, you expect more from them, so then it's more difficult for them to be like, I am 100% good.
Sure.
True.
Well, it's also like, because it's, we all have been Joker-fied as a nation, yeah, and maybe as a globe.
Yeah.
And so we are obsessed with finding Jokers in the world and sympathizing and being like, how did they go from the little boy to this crazy thing?
And also when someone is like, comes out and is like, I am the new good person, you're like, okay, I'm giving it a week. And after that, I'm going to start making fun of that person's hair. Like, I'm not...
Well, it's so boring.
But I think of the people in the past that I have been, like, all in for, politicians or whatever, I'm like, yeah, I'm into them for a week.
Right.
Well, you know who else everyone was into for a week when they started making fun of his hair? Jesus Christ.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Of Nazareth, yeah.
Of Nazareth,
one. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember.
Made fun of his hair so bad.
I do wonder sometimes what would happen if Jesus was here today.
What an incredible turn.
Because I do think people think that he would be sort of like this calming figure. But in fact, he would be like an influencer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually true.
Literally.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of was.
He was.
He was doing, like, pranks and stunts and stuff.
Literally. He was... Who's that guy?
Mr. Beast.
Yeah.
Jesus was the original Mr. Beast.
Oh, my God.
He was like, I'm washing 52 women's feet.
I crash this dinner and I turn bread into enough bread for, like, 1,000 people. Like...
Yeah, and then people that do commentary or posting videos are like, okay, so here's where he went wrong.
Wow. Have you guys ever watched a Mr. Beast video?
I scrubbed through one for the first time the other day.
It's really
cool. Was it the one with all the ages?
Yes, that was
it. I saw the trailer for that, and I guess there's, what more is there to say? I mean, when something literally looks like it's from, like, you know, Squid Game or V for Vendetta or whatever, all these sort of, like, already, you know, broad satire, like, where do you go from there?
Yeah. Basically, the moral of the video was, like, I guess a guy was honest or something, and he won.
Oh, so it's like a Willy Wonka style story.
But also, 40 was the best age.
40 was the best age.
I think 41. Oh, shout out. Yeah. Which is like, that's really empowering to hear as a gay man.
I agree.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, there's something to it.
Yeah.
I am scared for the moment where I can't, like, I feel like when I was like 20, I was like, well, I bet 30 is going to be, and now I'm 30, and I'm like, I bet 40 is going to be, and it's like, there is going to be a point where I'm like, I can't be like, I bet 70 is going to be the best time of my life.
Well, what if it is? Like, it might be.
Maybe it is.
Yeah.
That could be fun.
I do think we have said this, that like being in your 30s as a gay man is the oldest you can be because you're not young, but you're not daddy. So no one knows what to do with you.
Mm. Yeah.
I do think maybe 45 is the best age.
Mm. I'd say 42 because 45.
Okay. Wow.
Sorry to correct you, but we have to engage.
Yeah, of course. You know? Yeah, if we're just agreeing with each other.
If we're just agreeing with each other, then what are we doing here? Yeah. But 45, if I'm putting myself in the character of a 45-year-old, I'm instantly thinking like, well, I'm basically 50. 50.
Right.
Whereas 42, you're like, this is new,
right,
but I'm ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. What age do you wish you were?
What age do I wish I was? Honestly, I'm 29 right now, and it's the most disgusting. It's like, make up your mind.
29 is like, a little bit like you've been edging and like it's time.
Yeah, like I'm ready. I'm ready. I feel like it should be 28 straight to 30.
Yeah.
I agree. Like I feel like 30, I'm excited.
30 is a good.
Yeah.
There's also something about being 29 where it's like, you're lying. Like anyone who says 29, I'm like, come on, just tell me how old you really are.
I'm actually 22.
Also, to be technically in your 20s while being essentially 30 is so, like, embarrassing.
It's condescending.
It's like being 19, being in college, and be like, I'm a teenager.
Yes. It's that exact vibe.
Yeah.
It really is. I'm ready to go to adult college, whatever that
is. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What is adult college? The hospital.
tell you what, when I was, I've never felt more young. I don't know if I already said this on the podcast.
Oh, because because of course it's a hospital, so most people are in fact
elderly.
Yeah, you're like daddy alert.
No, they were they were being like, every single doctor, oh, young guy like you coming in? And I said, well, not in Hollywood.
I mean, if there was an entertainment industry within the hospital ecosystem, you would be like the number one star. You'd be the Zendaya of a hospital.
Yeah.
You'd be wearing the Mugler, suit, just going from the cafeteria to your little bed.
To go get my colonoscopy.
Oh. Should we do our first segment?
I think so.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We are both dealing with such different issues in our day-to-day lives. You have a full-time job in Los Angeles. You've had to uproot your home. You have to figure out work-life balance. Meanwhile, I am a freelancer in New York City. How do I fit it all in one day? How do I create my own schedule? What am I, some boss lady in a film?
You know, it's so hard. You have to be boss and employee. But you know what? We can't keep these things bottled up. You know, we need to let them out.
That's right. People all carry around different stressors, both big and small. And when you bottle them up, it can start to affect you negatively.
Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
I'll tell you something. Therapy in the past for me has been just a place where once a week I can tell someone what I'm thinking of in a safe and enclosed space where no one can enter and ask me to send an email, because it is my time and it is my time for therapy. And everyone deserves that in all across this great nation.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and hey, suited for your schedule.
So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/stradio today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stradio. Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Jabuki, our first segment is called Straight Shooters, and we're taking out our guns.
Yeah, no, I was like this, the simultaneous. I was like a little nervous.
Our first segment is called Straight Shooters, and in this segment, we test your familiarity with and complicity in straight culture by asking you a series of rapid-fire questions where you have to choose this thing or this other thing. And the one rule is you can't ask any questions about how the game works.
And it has to be.
Despite the fact that it seems like we didn't explain it in full.
All right.
Sam, take it away.
Okay, Jabuki.
Yes.
Among Us, Last of Us, or All of Us Strangers?
All of Us Strangers.
Being nominated for an Oscar or being dominated by an imposter?
Being dominated by an imposter.
Okay. Two Birds with One Stone or E.T. Phone Home?
Two Birds, One Stone.
A delicious meal prepared by your wife or the pernicious appeal of comedian Matt Rife?
Meal prepared by me.
Becoming a sneakerhead or copulating in a marital bed?
Copulating in a marital bed.
Being acquired by a private equity firm or being admired for the integrity of your sperm?
Being admired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jar Jar Binks or Baba Black Sheep?
Oh.
Baba Black Sheep.
Chicken Milanese or cheating on your essay?
Cheating on my essay.
Wow. You know, recently we rank every guest on a scale of 0 to 1,000 doves, and we had a sort of mini period where we were being overly generous with our guests.
The period was this week.
Okay. The period was this week.
All right.
1,000, 1,000, 1,000. Then we gave one person 850.
852.
852. How do you feel like Jabuki did?
You know, I'm trying to gauge. So what's interesting about this game is now it's becoming a mirror on us and right. how we're feeling about judging people. Mm. Because, you know, we were being so, so generous and then we overcorrected and yeah. we were being so, so critical. And I'm sort of like, where are we at?
I know.
And so with that being said, I think 923 doves.
I think that is okay. exactly your score.
I'll take that.
Because, you know, I felt like you listened in a way that was really important.
Okay.
But there was some hesitation still, and I could feel you sort of working through that.
Right.
You know, there's a part of me, and this is so not your fault, there's a part of me that's like, we've had so many guests in a row now not fight with us about the question thing. Usually people are trying so hard to ask a question because the game makes no sense. We yell at them. You know, we get mad. That's part of the joke. You know, it becomes sort of an iconic improv scene.
Fighting.
Fighting.
A good improv scene is fighting.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm ready for someone to come in guns a-blazing and really like put us in our place. Sort yeah. of Robbie Hoffman style.
Yeah.
But we keep booking real pros that know exactly what they're doing. Not that Robbie Hoffman is not a real pro. In fact, she's probably the only pro in this town.
Say that.
Say that.
Wake that up.
Yeah.
Should we get what I will say is mm-hmm. that I thought that all of them were going to be Among Us themed.
Oh.
And maybe they were, and I just wasn't sharp enough to mm-hmm. catch it. But the first few were like very Among Us themed.
Wait, what was... So I don't know anything about Among Us. I know yours was Among Us.
Among Us, what Last is, of Us,
yeah, yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. And then what else was Among Us themed, would you say?
What was yours?
Imposter.
Oh, imposter.
That came up.
Yeah, being
Maybe
dominated
I'm like
by an imposter.
Super heterosexual for even recognizing that.
I'm actually very surprised.
Okay.
What is Among
Wait,
Us
is
about?
Wait, is my score going to go down? No, please. Stop.
Yeah,
no,
I mean, it was anything, totally 874.
No, right? No,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
No.
Oh, my God, it's going. Wait, what is the deal with Among Us?
It's a game.
Okay, and yeah. what's it about?
And it was like really big during the pandemic.
I remember.
And then it got
yeah.
like memed past its original
it.
Popularity. And that's, I feel like, it overshadowed any impact that the game had to
Yeah.
have.
Okay, this is, all right. This is something I've been saying on stage. So apologies for sort of repeating myself. I think the fact that I know nothing about Among Us has like reminded me of this. I think the lack of monoculture, the only solution to it is that there needs to be a government mandated book club that everyone has to participate in. And if you don't, you get the death penalty. So that everyone gets on the same page, and it has to be a neutral book, like not Howard Zinn. Like it has to be a politically neutral book. Barbara Streisand's memoir, like just a neutral
sure,
book. Everyone
sure,
has to read it just for 1 year, just to get everyone back on the same page. And then we can rebuild from there.
I think that's a nice goal. But I think obviously the issue is
choosing the book
because
and enforcing the I mean you
no that part's easy.
Oh yeah, I mean imagine if suddenly everyone was being killed on the street.
I mean I would sit my ass down in a coffee shop and I'd read the book.
Yeah, that's true. So anyway, I'm taking ideas for what this
well I could like be. I would also fear that the Barbara Streisand book, you know, there's a chapter that's like, and we got to get this guy out of the White House.
Well, I yeah. think the Barbara Streisand book would almost unite the country, because for conservatives they would at least learn about Barbara Streisand,
uh-huh.
and for liberals, you know, she's so annoying that they would sort of be like, all right, well maybe it's time to give someone else the mic.
Or they'd be like, is this what I'm like?
Exactly. No, that's very true.
Because yeah.
it's really like a mirror. You're like, oh God, she like doesn't have any self-awareness. And she keeps talking in this like mid-Atlantic accent.
Right, because it's the audiobook.
It's
the,
well, yeah,
you actually
No. I mean, approximately, I think 88% of the country can't read. So we don't have time to first fix public school education and then get a book club going.
No, mm-hmm. We have to start where we're at.
I mean, maybe we can even start with a streaming show. Maybe that can be like a way
Oh,
in.
That's nice.
Okay.
That's yeah. very egalitarian.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, okay, what could it be?
So Tiger King didn't
Tiger
count?
King.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I do think, I mean, the pandemic, if anything, did bring that culture. There was monoculture for like
yeah.
the
well,
first few
months. Monoculture was banging pots and pans.
Sourdough.
Sourdough.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a real, that was, we want that in theory.
That's true.
A monoculture.
That's true.
Right.
Okay, so another pandemic maybe?
Fu foodborne this time?
Foodborne.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I still want to be able to go out.
Right. Yeah.
That was
yeah.
the like,
that sucked.
That sucked.
It's kind of like a nice convergence. Like Ozempic is blowing up, and then it's like, don't eat it; it'll kill you.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like check a lot of boxes.
Ooh,
that could be amazing.
Maybe a disease where Ozempic is the cure. Well, I guess it already exists.
Maybe it's like sunlight's bad for you now.
Oh.
And you can only go out at night.
Ooh. Oh, that actually would be really cool.
That could kind of work.
Yeah. Talk about,
And then everyone could read like the weird like sci-fi YA novel about that period. I feel like that's pretty good.
I mean, lighting design would go through the roof.
Yeah.
That would be great. Charlie XCX would do another Boiler Room set. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
All out at night.
The monoculture like would literally be Charlie XCX Boiler Room.
That's I love you should write a dystopian novel where the dystopia is that suddenly gay guy culture is monoculture. And so there are just like suburban moms that are like talking about poppers.
Oh my God.
I guess that already exists.
Yeah, that's actually true. We are almost at that point.
We're close.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've long said that I think we will only find our way when we sort of move from a gay guy sensibility to a lesbian sensibility. And I could almost feel that happening last year.
I felt like it was happening.
I think actually the rise of Barry Keoghan's crazy ass marks a switch between gay guy and lesbian, because they are dressing him like a lesbian and not a gay guy like Timmy Chalamet.
Right.
Yeah.
They were trying, Harry Styles, Timothy Chalamet, they were trying to make them gay guys. Barry Keoghan, they said, that's a lesbian.
The bathtub pic.
Yeah, the bathtub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was kind of like giving like Jamie Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they were kind of trying to dress Timothy like a lesbian too.
That's true, with the weird suits.
Yeah. I mean, he could go either way, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, that's interesting.
We'll think on it.
We'll think on it.
I mean, it's all about what's Jacob Elordi going to do, you know?
How long do you think that'll last?
Forever.
Okay.
He is tall. That's always kind of like evergreen.
He's tall and he takes himself really seriously. And I think when you have those two elements, you're in it for the long haul.
He takes himself really seriously, but also holds a little purse.
That's because he's listening to trends.
That's right.
He's also huge. Like every purse is little to him.
That's true.
I know.
Yeah, maybe those are like full size Birkins, but because
they're duffel bags.
We need a scale. Like,
I mean, if
you need to hold up a quarter at all times. Yeah. Like, we just know what's going on.
I mean, people don't know. You know, people not in our industry, not deep in our industry, don't realize how difficult, and I'm not even kidding, it is to be a tall leading man.
That's so true.
And it is. Are you confused?
Wait, just keep going. Maybe I'll.
No, it's just.
In.
It is just simply true. Like all. It's difficult just to be on camera as a very tall person. That's why sort of famously all heartthrobs and like leading men are secretly like 5'2".
I actually did not know this to be fact.
You know, like Tom Cruise, like everyone is just shorter than you think they are.
Yeah.
Wow.
Everyone is.
Especially
because the women are like 4 feet.
Yes, exactly.
Like that was the number one thing that shocked me. Like
women are 4 feet tall.
Starlets.
Yeah. Lady Gaga's like the tallest one.
Yeah. 5'2".
5'2".
She's 3'6".
Well, I always thought it was like the story of like a Tom Cruise type was like, and he did it all despite being 4'10".
No, I'm telling you, they're all 4'10".
It's because.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
And I actually know of people, in fact, we all do.
Oh.
That feel like their career has been hurt by their height.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Who?
I'm not gonna say. I'll tell you one thing, not Jacob Elordi.
Wow, because I know successful talls.
Name one.
Am I allowed?
Well, they're successful, you're not dragging them.
Joe Keery.
Who?
Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, you were not confused.
John Reynolds.
But he's not as tall as Jacob Elordi.
Jacob Elordi is like 6'6"? Like 6'5"?
He actually could be in the NBA if he wanted to.
That's like a tall man's tall.
Yes.
He's a tall person's tall person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. Well, congrats to him. Despite all the odds, he managed to succeed. So credit where credit's due.
I mean, we'll see.
Should we get into our topic?
Okay.
Let's do it.
Jabuki, what is the straight topic that you've brought to us today? And what is straight about it?
To talk about contact sports.
Wow.
Specifically contact sports. And I want to create a binary between sports that have contact and sports that don't have contact.
You were saying before skin-to-skin sports.
Skin-to-skin sports, yes. Raw sports.
Raw.
Raw
Yeah, sports. Uncut. I think sports that... I think this is a really good topic because we've covered specific sports before, but it's more we've covered like football and hockey and like the cultures around them.
Yeah.
But contact sports as an entire genre is so specific in its broadness, because I specifically remember like being like, what sports should I do in high school? And being like, well, I can't do the contact sports.
Yes. Same. And well, I wanted to wrestle zeroing, so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
So bad. And that was, you know, that wasn't a gay thing. It wasn't.
Mine fully was a gay thing.
That was
I wanted to wrestle so bad.
It was so crazy that people were just going around in high school doing that.
It actually was crazy.
It was also extreme, like the lifestyles that they live.
Yeah.
Them being like, yeah, I'm like wearing a garbage bag all week. Like, mm-hmm. that yeah. was crazy.
I'm spitting in the toilet all day. Yeah. I hated that.
But it was very Black Swan at the same time.
And I feel yes.
like that's kind of what drew me to it also.
Yeah.
It was like the psychosexual like performance of it. That was very internal, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Well, there is something about wrestling that even though it is, of course, so violent, there's also something so quiet about it. Like they really are sort of just motionless a lot of the time because they're pulling or slash pushing an equal... with equal strength. Right. Like, it's not like boxing or something where you're just like pounding each other.
Okay, I have to say.
It's like, yeah.
No, I'm. Contact sports is the central issue. This is going to sound literally homophobic.
Yes, go.
It's the central issue. The gay guys are like, well, I don't want to be touching them because what if, like, because touch means something different to me.
Right.
And that's
what makes them straight.
Yeah, that was what makes them straight.
Because straight guys, it's touching.
Because straight guys can do it. Because they're like, of course I'll rub all over this guy. I feel nothing
it's
when I do this.
It's even like a provocation. It's like, yeah, look at me jerking him off.
We're both flaccid.
And one of us is going to win a medal for being the least hard.
Being gay in contact sports is like being tall in Hollywood acting.
That is a really good point.
Because you can do it.
Yeah, but that
the odds are really stacked against you.
The odds are really stacked against you. Okay. And okay, yeah. And also being tall in real life is a privilege.
Yeah.
And being gay in real life is a
privilege. But see, this is what I'm saying. Being gay in real life actually is a real advantage to touching men. It's actually like sort of the main thing that you have to be in order to like go around touching men.
That's true. That's true.
Whereas if you're straight and you want to go around touching men, that's more difficult in real life.
Well, you have to play contact.
You have to play contact.
Yeah.
Like if you're a straight man and you're like, God, I wish I could touch men in a platonic way. You can only do that in the ring.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's the only way to male bond.
Yeah. Huh. Okay.
But then I think what's interesting is that you look at the non-contact sports.
Right.
Like tennis.
Yes.
Volleyball.
Ooh.
Why are those gay?
Well,
because like, those are gay coded. Are they not?
No, are they absolutely
they are.
Should be clear, are gay
they
coded.
Are.
Why are they gay?
Well, I do think this is a sort of slightly separate conversation in terms of tennis, in terms of swimming. I think the less team-based a sport is, the more gay it is, because it's like individualistic.
Whoa.
It's like someone basically, it's sort of the sport equivalent of posting a mirror selfie is playing tennis or swimming on a team. You know what I mean?
There's, okay, maybe this is fake. There's also something about it where there's more like form involved. Like football, you can kind of be a body and you can just sort of like run forward.
Be a body.
I love that, yes.
That was, you know, that still hits.
Yeah, that still does.
No, I'm not going to say it doesn't hit.
And that is what Grimes was talking
about. That is what Grimes was talking about. She's always loved football, and she was talking about football. And I actually feel like I'm thinking of like swimming and stuff. You have to like care more about the
forms. They're more dance-based.
Yeah, they're more dance-based.
Maybe that's what it is, right. Is that it's a spectrum from... It's sort of like the two poles are individual versus team, dance-based versus war-based.
Yeah.
Right. Those are the XX. Wait, that's
genius. But basketball, no, that actually really is.
Basketball feels dance-based.
I think basketball is actually the exact center.
Wow.
I sort of think basketball is a sport that to me is like right in the middle of the Kinsey scale. I actually think as a gay person, I don't feel alienated by basketball. I can go to a basketball game.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I think it, and I also think as a straight person, you don't feel gay for liking, like it is clearly, you know, right. acceptable to like it as a straight person, acceptable to like it as a gay person. I can't think of another sport like that.
It's also like the body on display in basketball too. Like you can fully see their face.
Yeah.
You can fully see their arms. Like there's enough like scantily cladness.
Yes.
In it.
Well, it's like, tanks.
Yeah, it's like tanks. Yeah, yeah, which is like mask, but also very gay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same with like old, in the olden days, short shorts,
right.
mask, but also gay.
Yeah.
I feel like basketball stars, when they cross over, like a Michael Jordan type, there's something where they're not Democrat or Republican. They're just like a symbol of perseverance in American culture.
Mm-hmm. They're sort of the good that you were talking about up top.
Yes. Exactly. They're the opposite of Putin.
Yes.
Michael Jordan is the opposite of Putin.
Or like Blake Griffin being on Broad City. Like, he could not have done that if he was a football player. And
yeah.
No one write in with
No, and I actually examples. And they're trying to do it with like Travis Kelce. And
not going to work,
like,
though.
I always still feel like, but what's the deep, dark, like, underbelly of this guy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you can't be a football player and be nonpartisan.
What, Travis is the one dating
Taylor.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
Okay. Yeah, you know, they dug up his old tweets and they were perfectly squeaky.
No, he That's is true. Sort of like a classic, like liberal white dude, like
yeah.
sort of like posting the right things online and everything.
Yeah.
Like in 2010, he was like, I love Justin Timberlake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It yeah. was, yeah. Like there was nothing really crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. I like the dance versus war axis.
Yes.
Because wrestling is really interesting because I feel like it's in so many quadrants.
Totally.
I would have to put it more in war.
In war, you think?
But it's so dance. It's so dance.
It's Beau Travail.
Because with what?
Beau Travail is a Claire Denis movie about someone doing military exercises that are very dance based and were choreographed.
Yeah. That's funny because in my head I was like, Beau Travail? I never said it out loud before. But no, that's
wrestling.
Yeah, that is.
I mean, boxing is much more dance.
Oh, I think boxing is more war. There's so much, it's so much more violent. Like there's like blood.
But you're literally doing like footwork. You're like on your toes and sort of.
Yeah, but with wrestling, you're doing literally the hung up video.
Okay, I'm sorry. None of you saw the Billy Elliot film. Right, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm shocked that this is something that was important in your childhood, but go on.
Hmm. Well, he is a boxer.
He's a boxer and then wants to do wrestling.
But he wants to do ballet.
Oh, ballet.
And
wouldn't that sort of imply that those are opposites? He's being forced into something.
No, because the boxing
ballet?
Footwork
it
is like
informs his ballet.
Right, right.
Dance and, I mean, listen, you could argue, and potentially this is one of the problems in our culture, that war is actually very dance-based.
Oh, right. No. So the binary doesn't make sense? The axis doesn't make sense?
Well, or it's more like straight culture is better at appropriating gay culture than gay culture is at appropriating straight culture. Because dance is not war-based.
Wow.
And you can sit with that for as long as you need to.
That was high-level queer theory. I really need to like chew on that for a little
bit. Yeah, that's interesting. That's kind of like a very interesting thesis.
Okay, the thing is that I've done like a little MMA, I've done like a little Muay Thai,
uh-huh.
a little BJJ, and the thing is,
excuse
is like,
me,
yeah,
honey,
we've all done BJJ.
That's a blowjob job.
Oh,
yeah. So you kind of like doing it, but it's like you clock in, clock out. It's not like a passion project.
Sure.
You have to do a W-9 and everything.
Yeah.
No, it's like up until you're actually fighting for real, you are just dancing. And it is just 100% choreo. Mm-hmm. And like you go to a place and they're like, do the 4 combo. And you're like doing specific moves and everything. And it's like, it is extremely dance coded.
It's up until J-Lo training in Enough.
Yeah.
The movie Enough.
I've never seen it.
Well, you better check it out because she has a pixie cut.
Okay, I'm sold. Yeah. I'm sold. That's it. They need to start including that in trailers, I think, specifically for Game
Which hairstyles do they have throughout the movie?
I mean, I actually think with AI, like the way that ads are already like, oh, you're a gay guy, now every ad you see will have gay guys in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Now it's like, they should start doing that more.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I need movies where Nicole Kidman is ginger. I need the natural.
You know what made such a big impact hair wise is the movie Atomic Blonde, which I've never seen. I don't think I will ever see.
No.
But I'm like, I'm picturing it. And it's exactly what it sounds like.
I love that movie.
She's an Atomic Blonde.
Yeah. And she uses it.
And she uses it.
For spy. I wanted to say, okay. I wanted to address the binary of like contact sports versus non-contact sports, where you take a contact sport and make it non-contact.
Like flag football.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember football never ever spoke to me. Yeah. I found it terrifying.
Yeah. Did you ever play it?
No. Mostly, you know what it was actually? Yeah. It seemed like there was like a high bar of entry with where gear is concerned.
Right.
Where I was like, I'm just going to be in the locker room. They're going to hand me like a bucket of stuff and be like, see you on the field.
Did you ever play lacrosse?
No.
You strike me as someone
who
might
have. Lacrosse.
You are very lacrosse coded.
Like you with like floppy blonde hair, doing this.
Wait, like for I everyone, so do see you just like
exactly,
like, just like waiting to go somewhere.
The lacrosse wrist action, just like walking around doing the wrist thing with your lacrosse stick, and then it's like you're sort of practicing doing it while you're walking around school.
Yeah,
was always such a mystery.
It's also a very Midwestern thing too.
It's Midwestern and it's like
and
Southern.
Southern. But it's also, am I wrong to say that it's also sort of like Northeast WASP Connecticut?
Yeah, yeah, it's that too.
I guess it's just white.
Yeah, it's white.
Yeah.
East Coast, do they do it in California?
I mean, I don't think they do.
Okay.
Yeah, don't write in.
I'm going to bring it to California. I'll be the first person to do it there.
You should.
I actually did one time. I was at a meeting that involved my agent was there.
Okay.
Get ready.
All right.
And the person who was at the other person was like really into lacrosse. And agent was like, well, Sam, you grew up playing lacrosse. And I'd be like, no, I didn't.
So
like,
I'm not alone in this.
You're not alone in this.
Okay.
I've never touched a lacrosse stick in my life.
What sport did you play?
I was cross country, swimming, track, and some tennis.
I mean, you're
all
literally
of those kind of
all of the gay ones
into lacrosse kind of to me. But yeah, you were just like collecting all the gay infinity stones of high school sports.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about non-team-based sports.
I mean, I
and dance-based, non-team-based
anything
sports.
That like required hitting at all, I was like, I'm out.
No, I know. Yeah. Me too. I could barely play soccer.
Yeah.
They would come towards me and I'd say, ah!
Because I was also like, I like being athletic. I like working out.
And that's where you're losing me. But go on.
But I don't need it to be like aggressive in this way.
Sure.
I prefer it to be a little more meditative. And that still stands today.
Okay.
Yeah.
I went to a football camp once and...
You play football?
No, I just went to a camp. It was like a one-day thing.
Oh.
And I remember tackling and being like, I love this. And then I got tackled once and I was like, I'm never doing this again.
Wow.
I was over it. So yeah.
But it had nothing to do with latent homosexuality. You just didn't like being hurt.
No, I didn't like being hurt, no.
But the pain is part of it. And I want to, that's, the other thing is I actually feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, I actually feel like, this also sounds homophobic, I feel like straight guys are more comfortable being hurt.
Yeah.
At least that's how I felt as a kid.
Right.
Where I was like, well, I don't want to be hurt, but they're all fine with it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's it is actually sort of a form of intimacy.
Sure.
In the same way that like a sort of feminine version of that is liking being hurt emotionally, like being like part of a relationship is sort of like testing each other's emotional boundaries to see what we can handle. For straight men, it's like hit me until I pass out.
That's so real, actually. Like the amount of times in college, like that guy at the party who's like, no, slap me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, totally.
That, I've always been like, get it out, man.
I mean, Jackass.
Punch me in the stomach.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Jackass, I'm so, like, I'm mad that no one has really contextualized that in, like, a, like, homosocial bonding kind of thing.
It's a tough,
There have been some articles, but there needs to be something more academic.
It's, when the Jackass movie came out, I feel like there was such an uptick in writing about it.
Right.
And I was like, I'm still not getting what I need out of this criticism.
Yeah.
We need more.
Yeah.
Like, did you book a hotel? And then, oh, there's only one bed. So I guess Steve-O and Chris got to sleep in the same bed together. And then what happened when they slept in the same? I really just want fanfic. I think I want Jackass fanfic, really, ultimately.
Did they have, they had a first woman in that Jackass movie, but they've never had a gay guy. That would actually be revolutionary.
Okay, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
I love what the presence of a gay man does to environments like that. Because it is like, it really does feel like a bullet in a chamber when you're playing Russian roulette.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not all fun. Like someone could discharge. Like something could go off. Like there's actual like potency to it where, I don't know. And like with contact sports and everything, like the level of homoeroticism that you can get away with.
Yeah.
When everyone is under the impression that like it's almost like everyone is trying to run away from that. But when someone is like, no, do it. I'm not scared of it. Then it becomes the most dangerous thing in the room.
It's like, almost like it depends on the entire rules depend on the assumption that no one is gay.
And that no one is enjoying.
And that no one is enjoying.
Yeah. But then it's crazy because it's like, but you're enjoying it.
That's you're all enjoying it.
Yeah, you're all enjoying this. So like, what's up? Because I don't want to get hit. I don't. But you guys love getting hit. You come back time and time again.
I mean, is it an advantage to be a gay man in a context where because then straight men are don't want to come into contact with you as much?
I actually think,
I mean, I think this is like this is some sort of comedy premise.
Well, but you know where comedy comes from? Truth.
It's a perfect
crime. We need someone to, a gay guy, to infiltrate wrestling.
I feel like this is so close to like a literal Degrassi plot line.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, where it's like, because I know there was one point where one character told everyone he was gay so that he didn't have to go to prom with this girl he didn't want to. Oh, but I also could absolutely see it being a plot line that he's like, and I'm gay, so don't wrestle me or whatever. Well.
I don't know.
We love silence.
It's a feature, not a bug.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we're too rigorous and we have to.
You know
sit
what I'm
it.
Thinking? I'm having a difficult time sort of like coming up with some of my famous theories for this episode because I feel like at this point, it has been so long since I've really contemplated a topic like contact sports because it just is not part of my day to day life that I'm truly. I was watching the Super Bowl and I legitimately did not know the rules. And I have learned the rules of football at some point in my life. Like, I do not remember any. Like, it all seems like it ended in the early aughts because that's when I was like last paying attention. Do you feel that way? Or do you feel like it is all around you and you are sort of.
I mean, it's certainly not all around me. It's not in my life anymore. Yeah. But it does. It's still around in the world, just not in our bubbles.
No, it certainly is around in the world. but I do think the movement away from monoculture just means that I can go about my life not knowing a single athlete.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like that was, I do remember, like I like this topic so much because that was like a genuinely alienating thing.
Yes.
I remember like being like, okay, they're all going to play tackle football and I'm going to sit on the side. And it's like, I don't know what that equivalent is now. Like the closest I have now is like just people talking about football, which I know this gets specifically into football, but I do find it deeply alienating in a way that is like, it's like, is this drama? What is this?
I feel like I did not understand football at all. And I would just like glaze over whatever came up until my brother who played sports our entire childhood was just explaining that like, even though he doesn't play anymore, he still keeps track because there's like stories and drama going on at like all times between like this guy got drafted, so he's on this team, but he's playing his old teammates. So like there's so much stuff like crackling underneath the surface, but you do need to dedicate like 3 hours a day of your life to keep up with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not doing all
that. No, this is what it is. It's sort of like how, I don't know, if let's say you're a gay guy that likes the Oscars, you can sort of basically participate in that without watching any of the films.
Yeah.
And I am, sometimes I was just in the barber this morning and I caught, you know, SportsCenter or whatever was playing and I was like, this is juicy. Like whatever they're talking about is basically like they're recapping a reality show or something.
Right.
But there is such a barrier to entry because the effort it would take for me to catch up would, I'm sorry to say, not be worth it.
It's too much. But now I know, like, whenever I'm in an environment and there's like a bunch of straight men who are watching sports, I'm not like, oh, who's winning? I'm like, so what's his story?
Exactly.
Yes. Where is he from?
Yeah.
Are his parents still alive?
And the fact that your instinct was to say who's winning is almost your bias against.
Totally.
You're like, oh, they're straight.
Right.
They must be simple.
Yeah. Oh, look at these guys. Yeah. Who are just watching. No, yeah. They're actually really.
You're like, hey, little buddy,
nuance.
Who's winning?
Wow.
But he has feelings too.
That's so true.
Yeah. It just holds so much for people. Like, yeah. All the contact sports.
In the. You go.
Tiny question.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you feel the physical contact in contact sports almost reverberates so much, which is why people feel even more passionate about supporting those teams? Because they're like, they are putting their lives in danger for me.
Yeah.
In a way that Roger Federer is not for me.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who Roger Federer is.
A tennis player.
Okay. What's his story?
Well, he's sort of like the current goat, I think people would say.
Okay, does he have long hair?
No, he
short hair. I always imagine a male tennis player with long hair.
Because of Andre Agassi?
Oh.
I don't even, just like the AI image that my brain conjured up. Yeah.
Federer is like Swiss. He's very sort of like, just very, picture a European man.
Okay.
Barely an athlete. Like, I think he is meant to be a business person, but he was like, well, I'm here. I might as well play tennis.
Hmm.
Okay.
Huh. That's nice.
He just decided to be the best.
Yeah.
All right. Wait, did you play any other sports growing up?
A little sport called theater.
Mm.
Oh.
I didn't play any sports.
So
in high
football
school.
Camp was, how did that come about? You
that
were not
was,
even playing football.
No. So I had cousins that were like really into football, and my brother was always into like every single sport. At one point he was playing basketball, football, and baseball at the same time. I kind of just brewed
football.
That's my thing. And then I played basketball in middle school, and then I got like a little knee injury, and then I stopped. But I was terrible. I made like maybe 8 points over 4 years.
Damn.
and it's not even like I took a lot of shots and missed them. I think I had like a 75% like success rate. I just never shot.
Well, you were a minimalist. You were like, when it's time, I'll do it.
Right, yeah. It was kind of like a ghost to just be like,
yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah,
you know, that wasn't what I was in it for. That wasn't what I was in it for.
I actually have thought of this where I'm like, here's one of the reasons why I was so bad at sports that I'm like, more of a minimalist. Like that I'm like,
no.
It's too, like, I'm not gonna be constantly aggressing on people. Like, I have to give them their space. I was taught manners. Well,
I find that for me, the problem with sports, and even kind of to this day, when I'm playing sports with other people, is like, I cannot 100% go for it. Like,
yes,
there's just no narrative that I can tell myself where it's like, I need to risk harm in order to do this.
Yeah.
I just don't have that level of competitiveness.
And it's a real peek into your own nature because you're like, damn, not to project this onto you, but it's like, if I can't do that, then what chances am I missing in my normal non-sports life?
Okay. All
right. You know what I mean?
Wake that up. I feel like for me, it was like, it's just not that serious.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
I know what serious is, and this is not it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What did you get competitive about?
Honestly, I do get competitive about like word games, like Scrabble. I will go crazy over some Scrabble. I'm not gonna lie. I don't know. I feel like like in high school, like growing up, when people be like, "Let's like play frisbee or something," I'd be like, "Can't we just talk?
Totally.
Can't we just like, you know, just like shoot the shit, like." Ponder.
Yeah.
You guys don't ponder. I was very serious about pondering. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's
very competitive about pondering.
Yeah.
You're like, I can tell I'm pondering harder than you.
Yeah, you're not pondering enough right now.
Yeah. It is true that some people don't ponder enough.
No, it's really true. And it's kind of sad to see.
I think potentially the government mandated book club could help with that as well.
Of course. That would
give them something to be inspired about.
Close the pondering gap.
Close the pondering gap. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, Jabuki, any final thoughts on contact sports?
Wow. I will say, I feel like there were no moral judgments on contact sports, right? We were just kind of like exploring.
No, I know. We didn't get into the political.
Yeah, you know what's funny with topics like this is like, you know, contact sports so obviously straight. So we're almost like afraid of saying the obvious thing.
Right.
That we are trying so hard to find a deeper thing rather than being like, right, football is straight.
Right, yeah.
Next.
Yeah. But it is also, it's homoerotic.
It's homoerotic, yes.
It's homosocial at the very least.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And then I feel like once you bring pain into the situation, it's erotic immediately.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I've never experienced pain without being absolutely turned on.
That's actually how you can go to the hospital more than once.
Yeah.
If you are
where you're just like,
it.
I'm in pain. Like, but you don't say what it is. You just have to say like pain. That's it. And then you can post as much as you want.
Sure. Maybe I'll pop in this afternoon.
Yeah.
I think I've got the health insurance.
Yeah.
For
just
once.
Like, whack your head on a subway pole. Yeah.
Okay, that works.
Yeah. Have some proof.
Yeah.
Honestly, that would be a great scam to get just like free food. Just like constantly hurt yourself, go to the hospital for lunch.
A $30,000 lunch every single day.
Beats doing the dishes.
Should we do our final segment?
Yeah, I think we should.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network. Work.
Jabuki, our final segment is called Shoutouts, and in this segment, we pay homage to the Grand Street tradition of the radio shoutout.
Okay.
And give a shout out to anything that we enjoy at all.
Okay.
People, places, things, ideas. We'll go first.
Yeah, and we think of it on the spot, so
yeah.
don't worry about the fact right. we're springing it on you. And in fact, I'm trying to think. I think I have one.
Oh, if you have one, please go first.
Okay. What's up, everybody back home and all my chosen family that I love so much but never see? I want to give a shout out to the actor, the British actor, Tobias Menzies. Are you familiar?
Which one is he?
Do you know who he is? Okay, so he was in that new Nicole Holofcener Center movie with Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes.
You Hurt My Feelings. He's the husband.
Oh,
okay, yeah.
I saw him on stage last night in a play called The Hunt. And he is a little cutie pie. And he is so, you know, when you see a British theater actor just finally do theater acting after being forced to be in like Game of Thrones for 16 years, mm-hmm. you just feel so happy for them because that's all they want to do is to make negative money while emoting on stage. And he really killed it, I have to say. I was so proud of him. He has the most adorable little dimples. I said, talk about a tall man who has been able to kind of make it. I am so proud of him. And, you know, if you're in New York, go see The Hunt at St. Anne's Warehouse. And shout out to Tobias Menzies, and shout out to sort of unknown British theater actors that prop up everyone else in the industry. Without them, we would all be nothing.
Yes, thank God. Okay, I have one.
All right.
What's up, everyone in America and abroad? I want to give a huge shout out to, guess what? Stand-up comedy. That's right. I'm in New York City and I have been doing shows and it is so much fun. People forget when you're in LA, it's not the same. Even if you do a show, you're like, that's fine. And here, oh my God, you feel alive. And I say, now this is fun. Now this is comedy. And you see all these people who are way younger than you and you say, ruh-roh, better get more successful quick. But even despite that, it is such a treat. And you know that, I know it's like you're always like, I'm never gonna have a good idea again, and then one day you do. Oh my God, there's no better feeling. I love stand-up comedy. I love Union Hall in Brooklyn, New York, and I love various Brooklyn bar shows. XOXO Sam.
Wow.
Love that. What's up, everybody? This is Jabuki on the mic. I just want to like give a nice little shout out to you know, all the people back home. I want to give this shout out to all the people who are not at home and I maybe haven't met yet and will one day consider part of my home back there. I want to shout out Tiny Desk. I want to shout out it's just so fun getting to see these musicians in their element, you know, just like having a blast and having a fun time. I love music. I love when people make sounds with a bunch of instruments. Isn't that the best? That's so much fun. And I watched Kalayla's on the way here, and Kalayla's was very good. I got chills multiple times. Just waves and waves of chills. I also want to give a shout out to NPR. There is an attack on journalism, so I'm enjoying them while I can. And happy final days, NPR.
Woo! And you know, watching Kalayla's Tiny Desk counts as supporting independent journalism, and people don't talk 100% enough about that.
I mean, I actually have the same response to watching Tiny Desk as they do to like reading an article, where I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna do this, and then I get like 2 minutes in and I'm like, oh, I have to do something else now, and then I never ever finish it
because it is visual.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't just put it on. Yeah. Like, no. I do need to see them
and
do
it's
it.
Like just long enough, it's like 15 minutes and you're like, you're so in for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it's like, this feels like I'm wasting, because I'm not watching a TV show, but...
Right. Like, I'm not getting a lot of information from this.
Yeah,
just like, wow, cool.
Yeah.
There's also something sort of anticlimactic where you're like, well, they're still at the desk. it's not like an OK Go video where it zooms out and they're like in a bigger space.
Yeah, if you want...
Like, how much longer can we milk this, really? Like, if we're being honest.
NPR, if you want to stay alive a few more years, call OK Go in as creative consultants.
Because guess what? I have to say, Tiny Desk to me is almost a little like Obama era of, like, the tweeness. I'm like, how about we go big now? How about big desk?
Right. Budget.
Because we actually
budget
need... Desk. Yeah, like, we need some chutzpah and some courage in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And we need artists to not make themselves small.
Whoa.
And be at a tiny desk. We need them to be at a giant desk.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I love that Jabuki was like, this is something I really like. And we're all like,
No. Fucking cringe 2012 ass tiny
era
desk.
Bitch.
Obama, first term Obama era, corny ass bitch. Like, gag me.
There is something about tiny desk where I'm like, 2 yards.
Yeah.
That's so true.
But
that's
celebrate.
So true.
I celebrate.
Every tiny desk is like, what if Kalayla was 2 yards? It's literally, what if each artist was 2 yards for just 15 minutes?
Wow, that is really apt.
Yeah.
I've been hearing a lot of Toon Yards in like placements and commercials. And
yeah. So Toon Yards has actually done the thing that like, you know, people do when they go corporate, or like it's like a comedian becoming a copywriter. Like Toon Yards has now become like the official soundtrack for things rather than being an artist that releases music. Like Toon Yards did the music for the New Yorker Radio Hour. So every time you listen to the New Yorker Radio Hour, it says like music by Meryl Garbus from Toon Yards. You know, whatever you're referring to, which presumably
that feels like about it. Yeah, what I'm referring to.
So anyway, it's a cautionary tale.
Or it's a success story of someone, you know, recognizing what they want in this world.
Yeah,
that's true.
I agree. And I have nothing against Toon Yards.
Oh, I why would I have something against Toon Yards? No. That would be insane.
No, I love... Oh, I'm...
bitch. You fucking bitch.
Bong, bong, bong.
No.
Meanwhile,
you
it's a blonde white woman.
No.
All right. Go off.
Oh, my God.
But I do think it's funny, though, because the ad that I'm specifically referring to, like, all the songs are about, like, hegemony and colonialism. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they just stripped it down to that.
Yeah.
So it's like, when you remove it from the context, and it's like, all right, the hook that was making me be like, okay, I guess, is now gone. And it is just...
Yeah.
It's like Cup Song with like with like vocal board stuff.
Damn.
Yeah.
I can't believe what bitches you all are.
Listen, Meryl Garber is a huge part of my life. One time I went to a free Toon Yard show in San Francisco and I said, I am 22 now.
I was streaming.
Yeah, I was streaming.
I think I never downloaded it illegally probably at that age.
Well, that's why she now has to do the music for the New York Radio Hour.
And it was your fault.
And
drop
your fault.
The Venmo. I'm Venmoing you $12.
Honestly, Meryl Garbus, drop the Venmo. We owe you so much. I demand the Kalayla Venmo Meryl Garbus today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, Droogie, it's been a real pleasure.
It's been a delight.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for doing it.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
Podcast ends now. Want more? Subscribe to our Patreon for 2 extra episodes a month, Discord access, and more by heading to patreon.com/stradiolab.
And for all our visual learners, free full-length video episodes are available on our YouTube.
Now get back to work.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes, Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.